The word lodestar has been in the news this week. A lodestar is a star used for nighttime navigation. In the Northern Hemisphere, the most common lodestar is the North Star, but it could be any star that's easy to find and stable enough to be used for navigation. At any rate, the word has been in the news, as you probably know, because it is an uncommon word that appeared in the New York Times in an op-ed piece written by an unnamed member of the White House staff. The opinion piece was alarming, but not terribly surprising. The author spoke of an administration in disarray, and he seemed to suggest, or she seemed to suggest, that maybe it was time for this president to take an early retirement, which is why the author wanted to remain anonymous. The trouble is that the only person who uses the word lodestar on a regular basis is the vice president, who, of course, has the most to gain from an administration personnel shakeup that goes all the way to the top. So here's the thing. As I read the news this week, I found myself in what for me is a rare and strange position. I was agreeing with Mike Pence on something. Lodestar really is a good word. We all need lodestars. We all need things in our lives that are lodestars. We need ideas or people or moral principles that guide us and keep us on track. And you know, the truth is we all have lodestars, but not every lodestar is helpful. So it's a good idea to evaluate and to choose those things that guide us in the navigation of our lives. I'm telling you this because in the last year and a half or so, this morning's lesson from Acts has been something of a lodestar for me as I've tried to understand the New Testament and the development of Christianity in its earliest years. And because this passage is a lodestar for me, and because it helps me to navigate my understanding of the formation of Christianity, this is the third time I've preached from this passage in the last 2 years. One of those times was at Tahoe on our annual retreat, so not all of you heard that sermon, but still, I've been thinking about it a lot, and because this passage is a lodestar passage for me, I cannot promise that you won't hear about it again in the not-too-distant future. This passage is important to me. It's a lodestar for me in my understanding of early Christianity, because as I read it, it seems to me that it is a prime example of how Christianity was and continues to be influenced by Judaism and by Greco-Roman pagan philosophy and spirituality. The key to this observation is this. In the story, Paul decides to preach to the people of Athens because as a Jewish man, he is distressed by the idolatry in the city, all of those altars and shrines and other objects of worship used in the adoration of Greek and Roman gods. So this passage begins with a very Jewish impulse to speak out against idolatry. That impulse has shaped Christianity, and it remains an important part of what Christians are called to do. We're supposed to unmask idolatry in the world, right? But then, when Paul starts preaching to the people of Athens, confronting their idolatry, he tells them about Jesus by quoting two hymns to Zeus. One of them says it's from a poem to Zeus that says, "Zeus is the God in whom we live and move and have our being." And the other is a poem to Zeus which says, "We are all God's offspring," and that God reference there is Zeus. So, this use of Greco-Roman paganism to shape early Christianity can be found throughout the New Testament. In particular, late Stoicism is present when the Gospel of John speaks of the Word, the Logos, and it's found in Paul's insistence that there is no Jew or Greek, male or female, slave or free. That's all Stoicism. And the whole idea that we're to live lives of faith, that is, we're to allow lives to be conformed to what we believe and directed by what we believe, that we're to have Christ as our lodestar, so to speak, that's all Stoicism. Certainly Jewish ideas and Judaism, And Jewish traditions are also present in the New Testament, and they all shape Christianity. Part of what the New Testament is trying to do, especially in the writings by and attributed to Paul, is it's trying to find a way to bring Jews and pagans together into one church, one faith, which would be shaped by Judaism and Greco-Roman paganism. And so throughout the New Testament, you have influences that are Jewish and influences that are pagan. Using this morning's lesson from Acts as a lodestar, I have become increasingly convinced that Christianity is at its best when it continues to be shaped by outside influences that didn't originate in strictly Christian traditions. Of course, Christianity often isn't at its best. All too often, Christians have been guilty of closing the collection of ideas that guide us and form us. What's interesting to me is that the New Testament and the early church tended to be open to influences from ideas present in surrounding culture while being hostile towards the empire. Modern American Christians often are guilty of doing exactly the opposite. They're hostile towards culture, but embrace the empire. At any rate, there are any number of excellent examples of what it looks like for the church to be at its best by adapting and being informed by ideas that come from the outside. So, for example, early on in Scotland and in Ireland, Christians allowed their spirituality to be informed by pre-Christian, earth-based religious traditions that preceded them. This is called Celtic Christianity, and it's wonderful, it's beautiful. The Reformation happened after the church in Europe embraced the humanism of the Renaissance. In Latin America, meaningful folk religious traditions have emerged because the Catholic Church folded pre-Columbian religious ideas into Catholicism. And in the 20th century in Latin America, many Christians embraced Marxist ideas in the formation of liberation theology, which brought new life to the church, both Catholic and Protestant. And because this is Pride Sunday here in Oakland, I want to point out another way in which the church has been made better, or maybe I should say another way in which the church is being made better by being influenced by the outside. That is, in many ways, following the lead of this congregation, American Christians increasingly are coming to recognize the full humanity of lesbians and gay men and those who are bisexual, those who are transgender, and those whose sexuality and gender identities don't fit neatly into commonly used categories. Christians increasingly are supporting things like marriage equality and the protections against workplace and housing discrimination, or restrictive rules against who gets to use which bathroom. Now, the work is far from finished in the church and in the broader society. Most Christians still have traditional opinions about such things, but real progress is being made. We have a long way to go, but we have come a long way too. Just think, when this congregation started flying a pride flag way back when, long before I was here, when you all started flying a pride flag, it was a radical thing to do, even for a progressive church. Now every progressive congregation is flying a pride flag. That's not something I'd ever thought I'd see when I was ordained 25 years ago. And here's the thing. The church has not changed in this regard because it was reading the Bible. Sure, we've evolved in our interpretation of the Bible, and we're doing a better job understanding the various contexts in which troubling homophobic parts of the Bible were written. But still, when we're honest, we have to admit that the church's growing embrace of and welcome of the LGBTQ community, this growing embrace probably has more to do with Armistead Maupin than with St. Paul. It has more to do with Ellen DeGeneres than any of the great mystics or martyrs. More to do with Matthew Bomer than St. John. More to do with Abby Wambach kissing her wife after winning the World Cup than with any ideas articulated by great Christian theologians. Which is great. It is how the church operates when we are at our best. And you know that we need to be at our best. All the progress we have made around things like marriage equality and legal protections for gay men and lesbians, all the ways we've grown as a society and our ability to recognize both culturally and legally the presence and the contributions of transgender men and women and of gender non-conforming folk, all of this progress is fragile. And in the United States today, we are facing strong opposition to the progress that has been made and to the achievements that have been accomplished by and for that segment of the American public that does not identify as straight and cisgendered. Christians need all the help we can get so that we can be at our best. Now, I've been focusing on issues involving the LGBTQ community because today is Oakland's Pride Day, but of course, we need to be at our best for a lot of reasons. 2 weeks ago, I told you about the teenaged African-American daughters of a friend of mine who were detained illegally by mall security in Capitola on suspicion of shoplifting, even after they showed that they had receipts for all of their purchases for the things that they were carrying with them. Still, they were detained. Well, on Wednesday, those same girls, aged 17 and 14, went to a different mall, this time in Milpitas. And as they were leaving the Great Mall in Milpitas, they were pulled over on suspicion of driving a stolen car. The police forced them out of the car at gunpoint, handcuffed them, and only after about a half an hour of humiliation and degradation towards the girls, decided to do the work of noticing that the driver's license and registration and insurance papers all had the same name and address on them. And of course, here's the thing, even if they had been driving a stolen car, there's no need to threaten teenage girls with deadly force, unless they've been threatening the cop or something. It's all very insane. When it comes to speaking out against racism, there is a lot of material from which to draw in our Christian tradition, but why stop there? We need all the help we can get. Why not incorporate ideas and sources of spiritual strength from other traditions? This happened to be what Martin Luther King did, by the way, and it's what Christians always do when we need to be at our best. If we're confronting racism, if we're supporting the rights of LGBTQ folk, anytime we're doing that which is good and righteous, anytime, we need help. We need to supplement our traditions with ideas and strength from other spiritual paths. Please understand that this is not a knock against Christian tradition or against Christian theologies or Christian saints. Rather, this is an acknowledgement that the greatest saints and theologians engage the world around them, and the best traditions, including Christianity itself, is not born of separation or of division, but of coming together and of embracing ideas and spiritual traditions and people from diverse backgrounds. Christianity is at its best when it embraces ideas from outside its religious tradition. And this is true of other great religions as well. It's true of Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam and Sikhism and Judaism. All of these great traditions, to some extent, are shaped by outside influences. And they're better off for it, just as Christianity is better off when we learn from others. Which means that if you are someone who identifies as Christian, you should know that your faith is best when you are curious about what lies beyond the traditional boundaries of Christendom. Our faith is nurtured by and draws life from new ideas, new people, new spiritualities, new ways to dance. And if you are someone who doesn't identify as Christian, you should know that you are a vital part of the Christian tradition. Your presence among us and your interactions with Christians makes the church stronger and better. You add life and vitality and depth to what otherwise is in perpetual danger of becoming a spent and dried up tradition. And I know this idea may seem strange and even offensive to some of my more traditionally minded sisters and brothers, like perhaps the prominent politician so fond of using the word lodestar. But the word lodestar doesn't come from the Bible or from Christian traditions. Its oldest known use is by Chaucer, whose writing was very secular and sometimes quite tawdry. Besides, it wasn't the Christians who first looked to the sky for guidance and spiritual and navigational wisdom. Christians had to learn about the stars from elsewhere, often from people who worshiped the stars. You cannot escape it. The Christian faith is a product of a long list of different influences, and we are better for it. And Christianity will continue to benefit from input that comes to us from the outside. So, my friends, let us be curious people. Let us be eager to look beyond the edges of our faith. Let us bring ourselves to the joyful work of following the way of Jesus, and let us bring with us any traditions, any ideas, and any influences that might benefit those who travel with us. When we do this, we will be better. Our dance will be more joyful. Our faith will be stronger. Our lodestar will be brighter. And we will do the work of living into the future with greater joy. Amen.